that they're used to long-term thinking. If a factory owner or a businessman invests in a new piece of equipment, initially that looks like a cost, but he or she does so because they expect a decent rate of return in the future. They can understand that we need to take the same view towards our natural wealth, our social wealth, and our human wealth. In other words, if we invest in a healthier population or in healthy forests or healthy fisheries, it's going to have a rate of return in the future. So that kind of capital approach, that investment approach to thinking, is exactly what we're using in this kind of accounting. And the second thing is that when you include the so-called externalities in your accounting mechanism,
yes,
it actually makes the economy more efficient. Rather than having government step in with a heavy hand to regulate things afterwards, if the true costs of production from an environmental and social point of view were incorporated into our accounting mechanisms, then actually the economy and the marketplace becomes more efficient.
So you effectively are able to budget for the so-called surprises that tend to jolt people, which are been referred to as externalities. Is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. You see, those in our conventional accounting mechanisms, those externalities are hidden. People don't pay any attention.
Right.
But they do come back to bite us later. In other words, if we deplete our fish stocks, then we're going to lose 40,000 jobs when the fish stocks collapse. But if we actually build in the true social and environmental costs into the accounting mechanism, they're no longer hidden. Then we can have a full debate. What are the trade-offs? What's the true cost of production? And what should the true price be?
Mark, another question or comment from you, and then I'll have to take my next call.
Well, just a final comment. I'm in the process of developing a genuine wealth accounting system for the city of Leduc.
Mm-hmm.
And I often tell my students that, you know, the word wealth, as much as it's bandied about, actually comes from the Old English, meaning the condition of well-being. And I think that's a really important
The condition
point.
Of well-being.
The condition of well-being.
Thank you for telling me that.
From the Old English, and that would be my sort of final comment and challenge for people to think about.
That's really wonderful that you did leave us with that. The condition of well-being, wealth. That's one I'll add to the original intention of the word religion, which means to bind community. Isn't that interesting that in some instances we have to go back into our collective history to get a sense of where our future might be? Mark, thank you very much for that call. That's Mark Olitsky from the Pembina Institute, who called of his own volition. I didn't call out to him. And as you know, we love these kinds of discussions here in Wild Rose Forum. If this is new to you, not to worry. We will be talking about this off and on, especially as we ramp up toward an election provincially, and we try and talk about the kind of wealth in our communities and how we account for that. I say that how we try and account for it, because there seems to be some discrepancy between the reality that you're living with and what's being reported to you. 866-468-4422. We'll go to John in Hinton in just a moment. I have some email here I should get to. And for those of you who have been patiently waiting for me to respond, I do respond. I'm literally behind about 4 or 5 days here. I do get back as quickly as I can. Some of your wonderful emails require more than a 2 or 3 line acknowledgement. And I do put a lot of thought into what you're writing, because I know you put a lot of thought into it. So I appreciate that. But meantime, this note comes from Ken in St. Albert. Maybe your guest has heard, Don, of some of the work by Bruce O'Hara. His books are about working too hard, too long, and what that does to the quality of life. O'Hara's books, for instance, are Working Harder Isn't Working. That was written back in 1990. They're published, if you're listeners are interested, by New Star Books in Vancouver. Now, one or two main points I'd like to talk about, Don, is work is unevenly distributed, so some people are working far too hard and are working too many hours, while others, well, they don't have enough time for work to support themselves. Now, in both cases, the impacts on health, family, and quality of life, in my view, are negative. O'Hara has some recommendations and views that could lead to better, healthier lives for us all. That's from Ken in St. Albert. Ron?
Oh, yes. Well, that is a very, very prescient comment. That's excellent. In fact, that's another flaw in our accounting mechanism. The more hours we work for pay, the more the economy will grow. So literally, stress is good for economic growth. So that's a very good example. In the 1990s, we actually had a massive increase in rates of overtime among a very large segment of the population working longer hours than ever before. Interestingly enough, if we take a more balanced view in the Genuine Progress Index, we also look at the value of free time. That's ignored. That's invisible in our conventional measures of progress. But I would argue that free time is a critical component of well-being. So O'Hara's books are well in line with what's happening in Western Europe, where people have far longer vacation time. The Netherlands, for example, has the shortest work hours of any industrialized country, but their productivity per hour is the highest in the industrialized world. So we don't ever think of that. That, again, is not on our policy agenda. So we just produced a report on working time in Canada that's right in line with that email you just received. Again, it's on our website. And I'd encourage the person who sent you that email to go to our website and look at the report on working time and work hours, because it's right in line with what he was talking about.
Let me give the website address out again. It's www, as I mentioned, .gpi, Atlantic, all one word, gpiatlantic.org, O-R-G.
By the way, when France went to a 35-hour work week, they found that volunteer time increased, that community activities did better. So, you know, there were positive effects in other aspects of society that are normally invisible.
Let me ask you quickly this question, because it amalgamates a few emails into this question, and then we'll get right to John in Hinton. What are the accounting principles of the 1990s, the disgraced accounting principles? Arthur Erickson, for instance, at one time, Harvard MBAs had to study what they do as a case history of things to do. What are these accounting principles in the 80s and 90s? What are they doing here in the mid-2000s?
Well, that's a good question. It's like, you know, you have a big ocean liner and you want to turn a corner, and you can't turn a sharp corner. It takes a while for that ocean liner to take the corner. It's hard to turn the boat around because we've been harboring this illusion that more is better for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in fairness, one has to say that the architects of national income accounting, the people who came up with the GDP, never intended for it to be used the way it is today. So Simon Kuznets, Nobel Prize winner, one of the architects of GDP accounting,
yes,
said this is not a measure of well-being, it's not a measure of welfare. It was introduced first in the Second World War to show whether countries were amping up their wartime production to meet war needs. So
yes,
at that time you needed to show that, you know, the economy was going full tilt ahead for the war effort. But it was never intended to be used the way it is today, and willy-nilly in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, politicians began to use these economic growth measures as measures of well-being. Now, any
is this the same distortion that
knows that that's not the correct use?
Right. Is this the same distortion that was applied to John Maynard Keynes's ideas, that ultimately he was proposing that on a rainy day you spend, and when it's not raining you save, and they forgot the saving part?
Yeah, I agree. That's a very good analogy. I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, very often we tend to take a little slice of something and forget to see the whole picture, but actually the architects of GDP did see the big picture. In fact, Simon Kuznets said, if you really want to tell whether your country, your state, your province is doing better or not, you always have to ask what is growing and in what direction.
Right.
Not just is it growing,
mm-hmm,
but you have to look at carefully what in particular is growing and in what direction.
This is Wild Rose Forum on CBC Radio 1. My guest, Ron Coleman, GPI Atlantic. And let's go to Hinton now. And John, thanks for holding, John. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on again. I'd like to look at this issue from the perspective of the election coming up. And
yes, please.
What Klein said the other day in Lethbridge, you know, he told reporters they should look more at the oil wealth being generated in Alberta and not so much his gambling habits. Well, let's look at what's being generated in Alberta with these new kind of performance indicators and in the oil industry. Yeah, it's creating great wealth, but at the same time you're losing that bank account you had of the resources in the ground. And every year they're worth more and more, so you're selling them off every year without accounting for the fact that you're losing them. So you're breaking even there. And he's creating a huge, huge pollution bill for the future with all the slurry ponds in Fort McMurray and that from the oil sands that are going to have to be paid for someday. But none of this gets accounted for. another thing that doesn't get accounted for is, you know, our economy is great, but how much of our wealth, of our resources is being sucked out of this province, the head office of the big oil companies and stuff? All that has to be taken into consideration. And when you do, well, Klein looks like he's digging us a big hole rather than doing us any favors.
John, your points are well taken in a couple of perspectives, and I know that Ron Coleman cannot necessarily speak to the minutiae of the Alberta situation, but nevertheless, you can give us a macro view here, Paul. Go right ahead, please, Ron.
Well, if you don't mind, I am actually going to, you know, refer a little to Alberta, although
it's
presumptuous for a Nova Scotian to do that. But I think that that point is very well taken. What are the costs? I mean, aside from the depletion of reserves, and of course the natural gas and crude oil reserves are being depleted. They're non-renewable resources. But then there's other deeper questions that are usually regarded, as you said earlier, as externalities. What are the costs, for example, of sour gas? There are new reports showing that it's probably taking a massive toll on the honey industry in Alberta, and that's a $200 million industry in Alberta. There are impacts on cattle.
By the way, that's controversial research at this point. It's not affirmed one way or the other, but it certainly does present some interesting questions to account for.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's what are the true costs. So it's are we going to take this into account in assessing it? Now, obviously, more research has to be done in all these areas. But the way to do more research is to highlight the fact that there may be hidden costs. If you're going to rely more and more on oil sands, what are the water needs in extracting that resource, and what are the impacts on the long-term water future for Alberta? So it's simply looking at the full picture. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean painting a negative picture. On the contrary, if you look at the full picture, you actually uncover hidden assets that actually have value, and you want to protect those assets and those values. So it's really looking at the whole picture rather than a very narrow one.
This is Wild Rose Forum on CBC Radio 1. Thanks to John and Hinton for your call. We're going to get one more caller in before 2 o'clock arrives. Redwood Meadows, I'm told, is just outside of Calgary, and Cledwin's been holding patiently. Hi.
Hi. It's a great program, and it's nice to hear my friend Hans Unger speak, too. I'll be very brief.
We got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just thinking of some of the aphorisms of Einstein, and one of the best ones is, and although despite his prodigious knowledge of physics and math, one of the adages was, not everything that counts can be counted, and not everything that can be counted counts. I also go back to the origin of the word economy, same as ecology, oikonomikos in Greek, which is taking care of our well-being, of our house and our immediate environment. And, you know, similar to the origin of the word management, you know, mm-hmm. that nefarious term of today, and
yes.
from menage, doing household work. So it's a shame.
Say that again, menage, it means household work?
You're doing, you know, like de menage, when you're moving house,
oh, yes,
right?
Oh, yes, yes.
And of course, you look at the separation in the 19th century of ecology and economics, and it's a shame, isn't it? Because it's been corrupted by the laissez-faire barons in the 19th century, 20th century, and 21st century, and
well, Cledwin, that's the point. I keep, and actually Ron Coleman and I were having this discussion, off and on for about 2 weeks, Ron, is what are 19th century and 20th century ideas doing here in the 21st century?
You got it.
And Cledwin, we're going to have to hold you at that, but I'd like to leave Ron Coleman with that last word. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, I think that was a very interesting comment. Certainly, there are things that matter to us which are difficult to count. On the other hand, we should make the best effort that we possibly can to measure and count what we really do value. The health of our population, a good quality environment, safe and secure communities. So the things that matter to us, if we don't measure them, they won't get attention. So even though some of those things are fairly difficult to measure, we should make our best effort to measure what we do value.
Thank you, Ron Coleman. As I mentioned, Ron Coleman is with GPI Atlantic. If you'd like to go to the website, it's www.gpiatlantic.org. And to take a look at what he calls a reality check. I'm Don Hill. We'll continue this discussion tomorrow.
This week on Between the Covers, food. Glorious food. From Kitchen Confidential to pigtails and fruit. A whole week of readings about food and our relationship to it. Weeknights at 10:40, 11:10 in Newfoundland. Just in time for a midnight snack.
CBC Radio 1.
Because some pictures need 1,000 words.